In this podcast, I'll discuss taking the flame test experiment at school to the next level. Flame test is where you have a Bunsen burner set to a blue flame, so it's basically an invisible flame. That's with the air inlet, so it mixes with oxygen and burns very purely blue, and then you have a little perfume atomizer, and it atomizes different salts into the flame. So sodium will be yellow, strontium will be red, potassium salts will be violet, and I'm going to discuss in this episode souping it up, increasing the technical oomph of it all. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific, and I've been looking sort of strategically moving towards this podcast. So rather than directly speak about it, I began to speak about iron solutions. This is the sort of stuff that you spray in that a student can get some understanding of it. So although you can't make sodium chloride, although there are methods that you can make sodium chloride, the actual starting metals are good to actually use to actually make the salt. So they can start off with the metal, and the metal is dissolved in an acid. Dissolving the acid produces hydrogen, plus the metal salt. So iron chloride, you'd have an iron steel wool, and hydrochloric acid, copper, and sulfuric acid, moving those two together to make the solution. So you'd at least demonstrate it rather than then, after you made the demonstration, have the bottles classically going there. Now, there is this classical, fantastically fun thing where you can actually have these bottles. Other things, like a bit of carbon dust to put in, and also iron filing to put in the flame, and you look at a variety of colours out of the flame. It's a great thing, and there's great experimentation. Do it with, when you put iron filings in, the iron filings burn. When they get ignited by the flame, lift up and form these sparkles, and as they heat up, the surface compresses and it actually explodes into a little sparkle, like the sparkles of a sparkler, to go forward. It's always a very spectacular thing to do, and there's an end activity where the students make a little broomstick cover over their match and pack the appropriate salt and sparkles into the match, heat the match up, and the match explodes with a jet of flame and sparkles. So that's a little mini Harry Potter wand. So that's the end result. What I want to do is sort of quickly discuss some of the theories that we're talking about. As a build-up to it, the two theories is the theory of solution, that the solution creates a little balls around each ion of water. So the higher the concentration, the smaller the balls, but at a low concentration, these are large spherical balls, and when you spray this in, the balls evaporate off, leaving you with the iron. So the process is to get a reasonably strong, reasonably good solution, but this is what happens. This is why you get the individual iron. And now the iron is involved in the flame. This is the theory again. The flame has plenty of electrons, so you've got a sodium ion, and an electron is in there, because the colour of a flame is just really partially bent, burnt material, which are radicals, includes ions and electrons. So the electrons recombine, producing these strong visible lines. There's a similar thing which happens with the anion, but that's in the infrared, and this is with a neutral atom attracting an electron. So an electron gets attracted to a hydrogen ion, and in the process it then cascades, not hydrogen, say sodium. So it's the actual transition down to neutral sodium. So a little transition inside the flame is producing, for instance, neutral sodium, and that neutral sodium then goes on to react. So it's a bit of a chain in the chain reaction then. So there's all that theory about ionization, electron transitions, electron affinity, ionization, all that sort of thing, and solutions which all go in to support the overall theory. Although you don't need that necessarily when you're teaching a year 7 student who's 12 or 13 years old, it is always good to have that as a general long-term understanding to guide students through. And now what often happens is that the teachers at no point understand the actual science of solution, ionization or electron affinity. And so this never actually, you've got the activity there, the actual substance there, but it never actually continues to actually develop this deeper understanding. This is the idea of this podcast, to add that understanding. And so another idea of the podcast is to add some more sophistication. So one of the problems with spraying with a flame is that there's a general problem that a lot of the spray misses. The spray sprays across and can actually extinguish the flame. So you're actually spraying water across a flame, so you can extinguish if it's a small flame. And it's poorly controlled. And so you have things like sodium salts. So although the individual, say, copper salts, they're not toxic, but they're not untoxic. So sodium sulfate's a snail poison. There's health risks associated with it. So although it's a very small health risk, you want to reduce that. So let's see one of a couple of things that we can do. One of the best things I've seen, and you have to be cautious with it, is that you can add some ethanol to your water solution. And this, if you add sufficient ethanol, so you can actually create a little flamethrower of it. And in big theatre demonstrations, this is definitely a way to do it. You can have little watch glasses full of ethanol and salt dissolved, and actually light it up, and you can have a series of watch glasses lit up at the same time and create a series of flames all at the same time. So that cognitively allows people to understand that different mixtures produce different flame colours. They don't have to have the cognitive load of remembering what the flame looks like. So there's a lot of all these advantages, but you are actually creating a little flamethrower, or you've got a flame going out of a particular watch glass. So this is a watch glass with ethanol and salt dissolved in the ethanol, and it gets lit. So there's a YouTube demonstrations of this, and it's quite spectacular colour. One of the things for observation is reducing the light in the lab, trying to get the lab as dark as possible. So this starts to go to some of the things you can do. You can put your Bunsen burner in a light box, a large box, which can take the temperature but shield the light. So it's very obvious. You can see the flame colour more intensely. Why do it? Well, if you're doing it for an entire class, for an entire school, year after year, it's definitely a thing to do, create a light box. You can create a air intake, plastic bottle intake with vents, so that you can spray around the base of the Bunsen burner, and the air is continually being sucked in by Venturi effect of the gas jet running out. So if you take a Bunsen burner and unscrew it, you'll see a little pin jet, and this produces high velocity gas sucks in air and mixes it. So rather than introducing the spray into the across the flame, you introduce it through the hole, and rather than having a trying to spray the spray directly in there, you have basically an atomization, a bit like a spacer in a puffer. So you build a spacer around it to produce things going up. You can then also have a wire which by surface tension holds solution, a drop, a little twist wire with a loop at the end of it. There's surface tension which holds the drop and introduce a drop directly into the flame, and the heating up will cause it to evaporate. So there are all these different techniques which you can develop and apply over a time, from showing the direct spray to other more controlled techniques, which means there's better observation going across. What I want to discuss in closing is the construction of a nichrome wire or stainless steel wire, not necessarily an iron wire, not copper, because at all you can actually use copper. It's used something very similar to copper and it actually does work, but having a reasonable resistance and having a way that this holds a liquid drop at the end and a application of a battery to this will heat up the end which is holding the drop. Now what I want to describe is the construction of one of these things. So these are basically a hot point. So the wires go, you get a wire and you can fold it such that it just heats up at the end point. So I've used this microscopically with very fine wires that you can see under a microscope, wound one of these up and used them for optical fiber, local area optical fiber heating. So this is something which is really small but heats up in a very small, small area. And the major effect that we're looking at is that the local area heats up, and as it heats up, it increases the resistance and the power dissipated per centimetre or length of the wire is proportional to I squared R. So it's proportional to the resistance. So if it heats up locally and the resistance heats up locally, you can get towards a runaway function. Now, obviously, you want something with high temperature, high melting temperature, so that's stainless steel, or if you've got some high temperature wires, which you can get, you need to have it there that the wire in a condensed area, the heat stays in there. So there's a process of doing this, and I'll try and describe it. Now, what you require is the wire through a small tube which is obviously got an internal diameter equal or greater than the wire tube. So you thread a substantial amount through this tube. This tube will be removed later on. The tube is a former. At this point, you bend the wire over on a loop such that it's beginning to loop back and come back, so it loops, it actually traverses a full say if it's going up at the 90 degrees is looped around clockwise to 0 degrees, minus 90 to minus 180, ready to come like that, hold that with pliers, and then to wind fairly tightly, but a spring. So this is with nichrome wire, a spring around the tube former coming along. When there's, I typically do it 3 to 5. I somehow always do it odd. And at the last turn, again with pliers, put a 90 degrees such that the wire then continues down along the axis of the tube, then remove the tube, and you should have two wires go forward, one through the centre of this coil, up, do a loop, and start to do the coil, then from that coil come down again. Now, after this, again, because I used to build these things for heating small, very small areas of optical fibres and for other devices and uses. This is just basically a filament, an element at the end, a very small micro element at the end, where it heats up locally and the heat increases the resistance and it gets a runaway effect. You then have the wire out at a certain distance. You bend the the wire with a metal ferrule, enclose it in a automotive female or male clips, basically female clips. And what this means is that there's an automotive connector, a spade connector. The advantage of using this is by far incredibly reliable, incredibly cheap, incredibly quick compared to the ferrule with the screw on the side, the banana plugs. So you've produced something like this, and you then have one ferrule going out, so one automotive clip, female clip going out left, one going out right. And so if you go follow in, it goes in through the left, up through the center, hooks around, spirals around in a fairly tight spiral, comes out again, goes all the way down and hooks out to the right. Now, what you do there is you then pot this in epoxy. There's a method of potting it into epoxy. Or what you can do is, if you do have a Teflon block of Teflon, you can cut out a holder for it, in which you can just pour the epoxy, pour in the epoxy, set it, and pull it out. There's other ways. You can actually use, instead of using Teflon, you can use non-stick silicone-coated oven-proof paper, heat-proof anti-stick paper for your baking your buns. Produce a little epoxy thing. This makes a very strong, reliable heat point thing. And you hook this up to a 9-volt battery, again with the automotive spades and a switch. And lo and behold, if you just tap this, the end of this will instantly, when I say instantly, in a fraction of a second, less than half a second, in the tenth of a second, go up to a very high temperature. So you just want to tap it and it will heat up. Now, if you make it, limit it correctly, you don't want too much power in it, you don't want to, you test it so it doesn't, it switches, it's got a very small thermal mass. Now, why do you want to do this? Because this has got a coil, it, is an ideal thing. It will take up a drop of salt will actually, by surface tension, sit in your drop. So your little thing will pick up a drop of your salt solution, and then you press it and it automatically converts into a steam, a cloud of salt, which is great because you can actually stick that in the base of your Bunsen burner and it will just switch it on quite safely. Create colour up the end. It's a very powerful thing to do, a very controlled way of doing it, and minimises the amount of salt going around the lab. So I hope I've explained this, and I'm just sitting out in the car park outside a Scout evening. So if you followed me so far, I've been to a play, and now I'm out the back doing it and using every opportunity to podcast as quickly as I can and cover things, but not podcast as fast as possible, but not faster. And I'm charting up charted territories. So this is covering very solid, well understood science, which is actually outside the general purview of school science. So the two things that are outside school science would be, I suppose, the understanding of how the light is actually produced, the solutions, what something is dissolved at, and actually building a robust, rigorous device for the observation of flame colouring. So what you really want to do is have some sort of black box containing your Bunsen burner, obviously a reduced Bunsen burner, and this so it does work fantastically. You use this, it heats up really quickly if you build it out of stuff. You don't put too much current through it or it'll torch. You don't actually need a 9-volt battery. You can actually use 1-volt or 3-volt batteries. And that's the story. So I hope this works very well for you. and I hope you followed it. In the meantime, keep on teaching, thinking, and doing science.